45. From the book of 1 Samuel, the 8th chapter, verses 4 through 22. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "You are old, and your sons do not follow in your ways. Appoint for us then a king to govern us like other nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to govern us." Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, "Listen to the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them, just as they have done to me from the day I brought them up out of Egypt to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so also they are doing to you. Now then, listen to their voice. Only you shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them." So Samuel reported all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, "These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest, and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his courtiers. He will take 1/10 of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and his courtiers. He will take your male and female slaves and the best of your cattle and donkeys and put them to his work. He will take 1/10 of your flocks, and you shall be his slaves. And in that day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day." But the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel. They said, "No, but we are determined to have a king over us so that we also may be like other nations and that our king may govern us and go out before us and fight our battles." When Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in the ears of the Lord. The Lord said to Samuel, "Listen to their voice and set a king over them." Samuel then said to the people of Israel, "Each of you return home." Friends, why do we continue to be shocked when our earthly rulers are fallible, are distorted by power, are out of touch? And why does it still cut us so deeply that earthly rulers pretend to be people of faith, in some cases a person of Christian faith, who has a phalanx, use tear gas against the people, and holds a Bible upside down and smiles for the camera in front of the empty church? Why does that still cut so deeply? Where are you, God? Don't you care about the children in cages? The immigrants who, like your flesh and blood, are seeking refuge at the borders? The immigrants and citizens who, like your own flesh and blood, wear black and brown skin? 45. Oh, how my heart hurts.
We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We
are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are never alone. We are not alone. We are never alone. God is with us. God is with us ever and ever. We are never alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are never alone. We are not alone. We are never alone. God is with us. God is with us ever and ever. We are never alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. We are not alone. We are not alone. God is with us. We are not alone. God is with us.
Love. 46. I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify. Who doesn't see red states and blue states, only sees the United States. And work with all my heart, with the confidence of the whole people, to win the confidence of all of you. For that is what America, I believe, is about. It's about people, and that's what our administration will be about. I sought this office to restore the soul of America, to rebuild the backbone of this nation, the middle class, and to make America respected around the world again, and to unite us here at home. It's the honor of my lifetime that so many millions of Americans have voted for that vision. Now the work of making that vision is real. It's a task, the task of our time. President-elect Joe Biden. Thank you, God. Thank you that your love encompasses all of humanity, that you care about the children in cages, that you love the immigrants who, like your own flesh and blood, are seeking refuge at the borders, that you love the immigrants and citizens who, like your own flesh and blood, wear black and brown skin. 46. Oh, we can breathe again.
Van, what are your thoughts?
It's easier to be a parent this morning. It's easier to be a dad. It's easier to tell your kids character matters. It matters. Telling the truth matters. Being a good person matters. And it's easier for a whole lot of people. If you're Muslim in this country, you don't have to worry if the president doesn't want you here. If you're an immigrant, you don't have to worry if the president's going to be happier to have babies snatched away or send dreamers back for no reason. vindication for a lot of people who have really suffered. You know, I can't breathe. You know, that wasn't just George Floyd. That was a lot of people that felt that they couldn't breathe. Every day you're waking up and you're getting these tweets and you just don't know. And you're going to the store and people who have been afraid to show their racism are getting nastier and nastier to you. And you're worried about your kids and you're worried about your sister. And can she just go to Walmart and get back into her car without somebody saying something to her? And you spent so much of your life energy just trying to hold it together. And this is a big deal for us just to be able to get some peace and have a chance for a reset. And the character of the country matters. And being a good man matters. I just want my son to look at this. Look at this. You know, it's easy to do it the cheap way and get away with stuff, but it comes back around. It comes back around, and this is a good day for this country. I'm sorry for the people who lost. For them, it's not a good day, but for a whole lot of people, it's a good day.
Or 46. Oh God, you care about the children in the cages, the immigrants who, like your own flesh and blood, are seeking refuge at the borders, the immigrants and citizens who, like your own flesh and blood, wear black and brown skin. I start to breathe easy again and trust that God is on the throne. And then Sean Isaac Palmer sends a punch to my gut. God was on the throne during slavery, during the Holocaust, when women and children worked in dangerous conditions, during internment camps and Jim Crow. God being on the throne does not permit Christians to rest smugly in privileged peace in the midst of injustice. I began this sermon with the demand of the Israelites to have a king placed over them. Samuel was incensed. He took it personally. He was one of those who had ruled in Israel as a judge. He took it personally. They have not rejected you, God said. They have rejected me. Tell them again what it will be like if they put their faith into a human. So Samuel laid it out for them, but the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel, and they said, "No, but we are determined to have a king over us so that we also may be like other nations and that our king may govern us and go out before us and fight our battles." 45 or 46. It doesn't matter if we expect either one, or 47 or 53 or 92 for that matter. It doesn't matter if we expect either one to go out before us and fight our battles. Many of us are fighting. We're fighting, we believe, with pure hearts. With pure hearts that have faith in our God. But even we must get past this notion that our battles are holy wars. Must get past this notion that our battles are holy wars. There is nothing holy about attacking each other. There is nothing holy about refusing to listen to each other. There is nothing holy about refusing to learn from one another. David Brooks puts a pretty fine point on it. He says, Trumpism and wokeism are not equivalent phenomena, but they both serve as secular religions for their disciples. They both serve as secular religions for their disciples. He continues, they offer a binary logic of good and evil, a cult-like membership experience, apocalyptic or utopian visions, witch trials for the excommunication of the impure, and the sense of personal meaning that comes while fighting a holy war. I refuse to fight a holy war. I don't believe there really is a holy war. Imagine my surprise, though, on Saturday morning when I found myself putting on my armor and picking up my favorite weapons. But something, I believe it was the Holy Spirit, invited me to slow down for a moment and to check in with people who might be having a very different reaction on Saturday morning. Because you see, some of those people having a very different reaction are people I love. And so I began to check in. And I gritted my teeth some, and I laughed some. And then something hit me like I've never quite been hit before. Something that ordinarily I would have scrolled right past. Something I probably would have smirked at or scoffed at. It was a picture of a woman surrounded by flames. It was an angry picture. It was a loud picture. And the caption said, "Don't cry about the children at the borders if you don't care about the ones in the womb." I believe it was posted as a holy weapon. I believe it was posted to play to the choir, but this time it played to me. Don't cry about the children at the borders if you don't care about the ones in the womb. I would never say that. Because I'm too busy saying you will never convince me that you care about the children in the womb if you don't convince me that you care about the children at the borders. You see how we use both as pawns in this holy war? When I believe the truth of the matter is that the person who posted that, whom I love very much, and myself, I believe that we love all the children. And I believe that if we think about who we are and to whom we belong, and if we remember the one who took the little children on his knees when all the saints were saying, keep them away, when all the saints were saying, keep them away, I believe we will end up in a holy place minus a holy war. 45 or 46, we didn't know. This whole long week, we didn't know. But as I went through mountains and valleys and times of fear and times of breathing again, I tried to listen to people. And I heard some things that I have not allowed myself to hear before. For example, and I want to preface this by saying, I hope that those of you in our congregation who are black and brown, I hope that I live my life in such a way and speak my words in such a way that you know that I believe in your value and your dignity, and that you are created also in the image of God. But I've been so busy saying Black Lives Matter that I haven't listened to the undertones. For example, I've been so angry when people tell me, I've listened to the people who say all lives can't matter until black lives matter. And that's the way I believe. But what I heard this week is an undertone, is a whisper. Black lives can't matter until all lives matter. And I wondered who was whispering that. I think that the coal miner who has lost a job, that took care of his family, that's dying from that job, that is taking care of his grandchildren because his two adult children are addicted to prescription drugs, to opioids, I believe I must listen to him when he says, Black lives can't matter until all lives matter, until my life matters. And I heard a whisper about the woman who took her three children to their father's funeral. Their father, a police officer, by all accounts, a good man. A good man in all ways. I've refused to listen to them whisper, Black lives can't matter until all lives matter, until blue lives matter. I've just been trying to listen. And I hope that we will do that. And we will do it with grace. I hope that we won't get in our self-righteous stances and be incensed by the Hollywood access tapes and refuse to acknowledge Chappaquiddick. I hope that we will live with grace and love, and that we will listen to and learn from each other. Here's what I saw this week. We are not red. We are not blue. We're not green. We are purple people casting blue red, and green votes. We are not monolithic one way or the other, blue or green, but many of us are decent. Millions upon millions of us are decent people. We need to get to work. Because here's the truth about the winner in Tuesday's election. We did win an election for decency if we are decent. We did win an election for Black Lives Matter if they matter to us. We did win an election for economic fairness, for the dignity and honor of the middle class, if those things matter to us. We did whatever it is that we hope to do. It's time to rise up.